B-Pod Studios.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
It's the 4 o'clock hour. Mike Missinelli Show on All-Star Day. Had to go, but Devon and Trey are hanging here till 5 o'clock. Mark Farzetta will join us in the 5 o'clock hour. 4 o'clock hour brought to us by Landis Block, your one-stop shop to create a jaw-dropping outdoor paradise, online at landisbc.com. Also, Jason Martinez is hanging in with us.
What's going on?
You're hanging around. You were supposed to be in at 3, but you were... what are you doing here?
I had to tape a bunch of hockey-related material, Michael.
hockey-related material.
Yeah.
Told you. Two and L, there's some buzz for the first time in a while. There's some Flyers buzz, legitimate buzz. I'm into it.
They haven't gone 2-0 since 2012, right?
It's been eight years.
So
there you go. There's some buzz there.
I watched.
See? Now Mike's over there cracking up, about to fall out of his chair.
Mike, I actually agree with you, though. It was weird. I was talking to Chris Terry, and I said, like, the building like it was like an electric feel, and I was like, why? Is it just because there's a new coach? It was bizarre to me.
But the package
you won in Prague?
It was that win in Prague that did it.
Know what it was?
On the fan base.
And I also think, though, that upgrade to the building, state-of-the-art presentation of the team, and then the team comes out and wins with a shutout, that grabs people. It's like a first impression. When you go out and you have something shiny, new, and really nice, because the building's like new. Everything looks very different in that building. And then you do that board, and then you win 4-0. That's kind of natural. People are going to maybe overreact when you present such a good first impression. And the Flyers, by not being 2-0 for 8 years, have not had a good first impression in a really long time. There's something to that.
Let me run this theory by Martinez.
What do you mean to talk hockey? Tyrone's doing a very nice job.
They're 2-0. They wake me up when they're like they middle of the season.
What a tough West Coast trip.
Oddly enough, Michael, I agree with you there, too.
Seriously, they beat a team in Prague, and they beat the lousy Devils.
Yep. They've won 10 games in a row and not made playoffs. They make no sense.
Right.
Until they do, they make sense.
When I recognize they're a good team, I will say it.
Yep.
Now let's get into you with the hockey thing, and because I have a theory.
Ooh,
now, when I first got out of college, started working for a newspaper, they asked me what beat I wanted to cover.
Mm-hmm.
And I said hockey, because I was really into hockey back then. Because I liked the sport.
Yeah.
I was too young I hadn't broken out of the fan thing yet.
Yeah.
Here's my philosophy on people who cover hockey in this town. It's their favorite sport. They love themselves some hockey. And therefore, they cover it kindly instead of covering it like you should.
I agree.
You agree?
I agree.
Oh.
I think there's a lot of that that goes on. I brought this up earlier. I think that you were already gone. Using beat writers, using nicknames of players, calling them Coots.
Yes.
Or G.
Simmers.
Simmer. Yeah.
And that's what they do. They talk in the vernacular of hockey.
Mm-hmm.
They go, there was a juicy rebound. Now, who writes there's a juicy rebound?
Yeah. Yeah. No,
they,
I agree
with
you.
They're into the culture of hockey because they like it. So, therefore, they don't cover it as critically. Like, we're talking about the Phillies. And we sit here. I like baseball. I rip into the Phillies.
Yep.
At any chance I get, if they're not
doing
right by their fan.
You remove your love of the game.
Exactly.
Yes.
The people who cover hockey foster this everything's okay mentality when they haven't won a cup in 43 years.
Mm.
And it rankles me.
Yeah. No, and I agree with you. I think that when you get too close, you can love the sport and still cover it objectively,
mm-hmm.
but you can't immerse yourself in the lingo of it. Like, you never hear me in an interview with players after a game and use their nicknames and stuff like that. I think I think it would be inappropriate for me to do that. And I don't even really cover the team as a columnist type thing. I just think that's not my place to do publicly on the
airwaves.
So
you're saying you separate yourself from the principle that I just put out there.
Yeah.
You are conscious of that.
Yeah.
And therefore, you try not to get overly gooey about your favorite sport.
Well, see, I get more gooey about this sport than I do that team. Because I don't think that team's done the right by their fans for far too long. I love the sport. But I think that the team over the last however, and I won't even count 2010 because that was a blip, Mike. I think that they've done wrong by their fans for far too long and haven't had a positive enough result to earn it. So 2010, we go, they went to the cup in 2010, and that's great, but it was luck. Just because they got a lucky break in the way teams got knocked out.
The Flyers have been crafty. And I made this example earlier. They've hired general managers who are Flyer heroes with a fan base that worships Flyer heroes. So they bought themselves a lack of criticism because of the benevolence put forth on Clark and Hextall.
Well, I think Hextall did a good job to a point, but he was never willing to move the ball forward.
I used to have these arguments with you.
Yeah.
Hextall is your all-time hero.
Well, Pelly was, but...
And you would not criticize Hextall.
I think he did a good job.
His back.
I think he did a good job setting the team up for the future, but eventually it got to a point where I think a couple things happened. Number one, he was never willing to be in the present. It just kept always being about next year, next year, next year. And eventually you got to say, I got to S or get off the you-know-what. And then the other part of it was, I think that he lost his way as a leader of the organization with his power. You can read between the lines on that what you want, but basically I think that he worried about a lot of things he didn't need to worry about, like keeping doors closed in certain areas, editing marketing videos. I thought that was stupid.
See, here's,
if you win, you can do that.
Here's my philosophy on covering sports. Not that I'm asking anybody, it's just indigenous to me. My philosophy is to hate everybody until they prove worthy of like.
Well, that's a cynical view.
Could you be neutral on everybody until they prove like neutral? Why you gotta hate everybody?
I used hate to embellish.
But couldn't it be neutral?
I used hate aggressive. To embellish the point.
You're ambivalent, is what you're saying.
Right.
Until which is fair. That's
another.
Fair.
Exactly.
Until
wait.
Swung, yeah.
Right. For instance, if they hire Ron Hextall, I liked him too as a player. But I can't.
It shouldn't
like,
affect your judgment,
in.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think it does. The Flyers have perfected that over the years.
They did, yeah.
So,
and that's why they annoy me so much.
So this would be like if Howie stops being GM, the Eagles hire Foles as
go
GM.
Jaws. Go Jaws.
No, but you hire Foles, who won the Super Bowl. Then you go, well, I can't rip Nick Foles. There's a whole society that won't say a bad word. He could have 25 bad drafts, and people still wouldn't criticize him because that would be he would be the equivalent to Clark because he's the hero.
That wouldn't be me.
No, that wouldn't be you, but it would be other people
who
would not criticize Foles.
My philosophy is that I can't get carried away because it's some hero who took over the general manager's job. So you look at it with a jaundiced eye until he proves otherwise.
Well, there's a difference here, though, too, Mike. And when it comes to Hextall, if you want to go down that avenue, is that he did leave and did put in his time coming up through another system and learning how to be an upper-level management guy and was very successful in that role with the King, so
as an assistant,
but he was qualified for the promotion. He was qualified,
but in that situation, he was in the business end of it. He was the personnel guy. So, if you wanted a team to rebuild through personnel, which is what they did with him, then that was a good decision. It wasn't like they just gave it to him because he was Bob Clark, which was the case then when he didn't come up through the ranks. He was just handed a GM title.
Yes,
you know.
All right. It's just a little spit.
I know you and Clark are like golfing and stuff.
Let me ask you this, Mike.
Bob and Clark and I did not. Well, he didn't like me.
He'd like to take a 7-iron to your head.
He didn't like me.
He told me that once.
I said he wasn't a good general manager, which he was not.
Nope, wasn't.
And so, how dare I say that, be honest about any Flyer hero. And so that's why Flyer fans stacked up against me.
Well, the other thing that went against it, too, is that they could outspend mistakes before. But when the salary cap came into the league, that's where you go, okay, there's pre-salary cap in that sport and there's after. What have they done post-salary cap? Nothing of significance. Signed guys, aging players, big names at the wrong times of their career, too much money, and that's what's cost them. So you got to look at it two different ways. When there's no cap and the old man was alive with that checkbook, you could outspend anybody. It wasn't a problem.
The old man didn't like me because I criticized Clark too. Clark's wife, Trey, tried to get me banned from the Spectrum.
Huh.
Can you imagine that?
I can imagine.
I criticized his ability as a gentleman.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, a lot
how
of people
early in the coverage was that?
What?
You said how early was it into your coverage of the team? You said you started young.
That was week two.
That was when I was doing sports like radio.
Okay. I thought you meant when you were writing. You chose the Flyers.
No, I was.
He was still playing then.
He was playing. I was actually covering him. I thought he was an amazing player.
But
you're able to separate the two.
No, JC, you can speak to this.
He's a terrible GM.
Yep.
How many accidental enemies have you had because you produced for Mike?
Accidental enemies?
Yeah, where people like are like, oh, you work with that guy, you got to kind of smooth it over because they got an old grudge against Mike.
Well,
it's happened
to
me quite a few times.
I used to say that. I go, well, there's another one. When we go to break sometimes, you go, what? I go, there's another guy never coming on again. And well, I mean, what do you mean? I go, well, yeah, you put the guy under the heat lamp. Like, where were you on the night of the 17th? 3 seconds
into
the interview.
I've only done that to two people.
Who's that?
Michael Wilbon.
Oh, okay. I wasn't a part of that.
I was part of that one when you chiefed them.
And Skip Bayless.
Yeah, I was here for that one.
Really, only two that I've really accosted.
Well, Utley didn't appreciate the one interview. And you didn't even realize it at the end. You're like, all right, Chase, thanks for going. And he goes, yep.
Oh, no, I remember. I remember he did that.
Because you went spinning nickels on his forehead.
No, I dared ask him about him saying the world
personality
champions.
Yeah, and it was about just being more out. Because all of a sudden, they gave us this availability to him in, like, February for no reason.
They were weak PR-wise. And so they gathered up all the troops and took the guys that they thought would generate better PR.
I remember you and I talking.
Like,
this is weird. Like, out of the blue, what are we even going to talk to him about?
Yes.
So you just kind of got into him, like, not, you know, being very inward personality wise, and I guess he just didn't like it because, you know, he was Chase freaking out.
Listen, people have to understand, all I'm going to do is ask him an honest question. It's nothing personal. Like, I'm not going to say you wear bad suits, you know, in an interview, you know?
No, he would.
I'm just
me.
Asking about the whole thing.
You tell me that.
Nat, let me ask you this question here.
Yes.
Because there's something that's another thing that's kind of bugging me today.
What?
Not you. It has nothing to do with you. You're just reading. Why do organizations, when they fire somebody, say they've relieved them of his duties?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
It's softening of the
blow. That's just the way it was reported. So I guess that's why.
But why? That's a good question.
Because they are trying to soften the language.
Yeah.
Kindly.
But so why do we have to play by their rules?
Well, we don't.
I mean, we don't, but I just read what's, I think, reported because that's the way that it's phrased in the news.
See, there's three ways to phrase it.
I can change it.
Should I change it?
Change it to fired.
Okay.
Or just go S-canned.
Just
say the guy was S-canned.
Well, we don't have to go that far, but yeah, fired.
Okay.
And what's funny is if your contract, take out sports. They do that with regular jobs, like in this building. They'll do that. The guy doesn't know where he's going to get his meal money. He wasn't relieved of his duties. He was fired. And now he's struggling to find work. Like, like in sports, they'll say release the step. They'll try to say contract wasn't renewed with like a football player.
Decided not to part ways.
But if you're Trey Thomas and you're the left tackle, you're here today and you're going tomorrow, you're not relieved of your duties. You were fired and you got to find a way to get some work.
Yep.
Why do they say it like that?
It's a softening of the message.
But keep it real.
It's a nicer way to say it.
But like,
they've convinced the media to follow suit.
Well, like when Chip Kelly was fired, Mike, to me, he wasn't fired and he wasn't relieved of his duties. He was S-canned with a day left in the season, a game left. Because he deserved to be that.
Yeah. And they were angry at it. There was vitriol towards him, though.
Like, Gabe, I kind of feel bad for Gabe because the general manager gave him garbage. What was he going to turn with that pitching staff?
I don't like the softening of this. I don't like the lower body injuries. I don't like the...
And that's the thing.
I don't like any of this stuff.
Whatever the team...
lower body injury. It's fraudulent. They're controlling the world.
Whatever the team...
Controlling our world.
Big brother, Michael.
Whatever the team's official statement is generally how I word it for my updates, since it's supposed to be news. So I give it to me like they do. Or I give it to the people.
I tend to
like
agree with Natalie and her interpretation of the vernacular, Michael.
You shouldn't say it, though, Mike. You shouldn't say relieved of duties. You say fired.
You could say fired.
But the news person, right straight down the line.
Yeah.
Why?
So, like, if the Flyers release some...
Why does the news person have to say it?
Well...
That's the news as it was presented.
The news is you got fired. That's the news.
Yeah, but I read the official report. So if the Flyers did give a report and it said so and so has a lower body injury, that's how I would report it.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what the team is saying.
Guess. She can't guess and say it's a knee if it's an ankle.
Screw your damn report. He got fired. That's what I was saying.
That's why you're in here and she's in there.
You're going off the facts.
Let's get a call here. Jerome in West Philly. Oh. What's up, Jerome?
Eminem, what's going on, man?
Come on, Jerome.
All right. How you doing? My man.
I just want to speak to everybody. What's going on, family? I can't get everybody. I just want to say what's up. Happy 10th, everybody.
Thanks, Mike, Jerome. You've been with the station for a really long time, man. We appreciate it.
Dude, he was like the 503 caller.
Yep.
For do you always still call it like 503?
Yeah.
General Knowledge Wednesday. I mean, what's happening, man? 503. I swear to God, he was on 503 every day.
That's the work days.
Hey, look, y'all are prime example of when y'all eat, we eat, man. I mean, 10 years ago, we never thought about Fan Fest. And now, look, I mean, everything is evolving in the upward direction for the radio station and all you guys, man. I just want, as a caller, I just want to say thank y'all for all y'all's calls.
Thanks, Jerome. Now, you've been a long-time listener to the station. What makes you listen to the station?
I like how it's diverse. You know, y'all don't keep it on sports. Y'all throw a little bit of stuff in there, you know, a little personal stuff, like Natner said. I don't know where she got that from. But, you know, stuff like that. Yeah, it makes it interesting radio.
Like,
you know,
Natalie's TV, the conversation about the Nat TV.
I saw this.
It's interesting.
That took off, apparently.
It did. It took off.
That TV should take its way to a dumpster, man. That thing's tiny. I got a phone bigger than that TV.
I don't want to take up all your time, but, you know, this is like the 12 days of Christmas for me because, you know, in 12 days, you know what jumps off, man. I can't wait. I've been waiting all summer long, and as soon as the first jump ball goes up, I'm hyped.
Oh, you're talking about
know you 23rd.
Boston Celtics.
Hey, Mike,
yep.
Real quick,
uh-huh.
I got a bet for you and your show and Anthony's show, you and Jason.
Mm-hmm.
How about the two games Lakers play the Sixers, how about we put a sandwich on it?
All right. I got you.
And I'm talking about Ty, Nat. I'm not excluding anybody. Ty, Nat,
yeah.
Jason.
I know you're all hype about your Lakers team because they got five players.
Hey, well, yeah.
But a team is 12. So I'm wondering where are you going to go from 6 to 12?
Mike, we can't get in this conversation in 2 minutes, so let's not try it.
Yeah, I know their starting lineup looks all right. More than that. They need more than that, don't you?
Hey, the bench is not that bad either. But we're going to see. Like I said, fan week you got.
We got it.
Y'all have a great day. Great show, y'all.
Big sandwich.
Mm. Right. Dagwood? Right. You going Dagwood on that one?
No, I'm going
so the first time they play him is January 25th at home on a Saturday. Second time, March 3rd in L.A.
Overly big Lakers hype when they have to play a lot of minutes with guys.
It's because LeBron. They're not going to count out LeBron James.
But they only look at LeBron in a starting lineup 40-minute capacity, and which is not going to be the case.
And right? AD, for whatever reason, matches up terribly with Embiid head-to-head.
Mm-hmm.
He just has a lot of trouble with Embiid.
He does.
Because of the physicality, which I'm going to wonder now, who LeBron guards versus the Lakers actually have some matchup issues. The Sixers provide a lot of matchup issues for the Lakers specifically, especially with LeBron at the point having to guard Ben Simmons. He won't be able to play offense at a high level if he's actually playing defending Ben Simmons because Ben Simmons will run him ragged. It's actually a matchup issue.
Yeah, speaking of LeBron, did you watch the Dodger game last night, Tyrone?
Chunks with the Flyers, yeah.
Did you see who was in the first row behind the plate?
It was
Maverick Carter.
Oh, Maverick was in there.
You see Maverick Carter there?
Yeah, I actually
screened the whole game.
Well,
of course he is. He can go where he wants.
I guess he can.
Yes, he can.
And I bet you he's working on getting some players, or he's down with Magic. And Magic's part owner. So, you know.
Yeah, he can go where
he wants. He's probably going to make some changes, too. Maybe one of his clients becomes a new manager.
Off all night looking at that cell phone.
He got to handle business.
Whoa.
Got to handle business. Yeah, he's probably working on replacing Roberts because he's out. Gotta get
Roberts.
Yeah, he's out.
You think so?
I'm pretty sure.
Because of that meltdown, because he brought in Kershaw?
Yeah, they're calling Madden right now. They want Madden. They're going to overpay the Angels.
Really?
Hey, you coming to L.A.? Yes.
Send Roberts here.
Oh, I'd love that. But I'm saying in the meantime, yeah, they'll say, hey, what are they going to give you, $12 million, $8 million? All right, we'll give you $9 million.
That team came up small last night, though.
What's up with Clayton Kershaw in the playoffs?
It's weird.
What's the problem?
Yeah, Mike, you're a baseball guy.
What's his problem?
He's the biggest gap between regular season ERA, postseason ERA, like ever among great players.
A situation like that, like bringing him in relief, and he got the third out, and they were stretching it by throwing him out for another inning because his stuff is not that. Late in the game, your stuff has to be strikeout stuff, and he doesn't really have strikeout stuff.
It's contact.
So he missed the strike zone with 89-90, and he got tattooed.
It was like the Phillies bullpen guy.
That's the thing. They're so afraid of their bullpen that they tried to stretch him an extra inning.
But that goes back to the manager. You go to a guy and you hope, this guy can't do it. And that's why they're mad at Roberts. They're blaming him more than they're blaming Kershaw, but they're blaming Roberts for using him an extra inning more out there.
That was a dagger in Bryce Harper's heart last night.
Oh, was it? Oh, no.
And then people on Twitter, I'll tell you what, those Nationals fans are some cretins. They're tweeting at his wife, tweeting at him. I can tell you that ain't right. They were tweeting at his wife, like, in your face, like they were saying something about his kid last night. They're bad.
See, I like the
line. They were doing that the last time.
I know they did it the last time. Yeah, now they're going after it. They win, and he's not even, he's home somewhere home, and they're tweeting at the wife. She's breastfeeding the baby. And they're going after him. That's just.
Yeah, they got that team picture near the pitcher's mound. That'd make a nice postcard to send to him if you're Mike Rizzo.
Wrong.
So, yeah, right, let's take a break. 610-632-0975. Jim Salisbury from NBC Sports Philadelphia will join us with his views on the firing and who might be next in line. All kinds of ramifications here. The coaching staff is back. The manager is gone. The front office stays. Not a lot of wiggle room. We'll figure it all out after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Well, it's 4:30. It's the Mike Missinelli Show. And the big news today, Gabe Kapler are gone. They also announced that most of the coaches were coming back. We already knew the pitching coach was gone, and Charlie Manuel wasn't going to return, so they're looking for two big positions there. But the front office survives, and now it's a hunt for a new manager. And the man who reported the Kapler firing earlier today joins us, Comcast Business Hotline, NBC Sports Philadelphia, covering Phillies, and he is the man when it comes to inside knowledge on this squad, Jim Salisbury. Jimmy, how you doing today?
Hey. Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Fantastic. All right. Then let's go back in time a little bit. First of all, we can only have theories on why it took so long, and my theory is that it was very difficult for Middleton to undercut Klentak by firing this guy. Is that what your information tells you, or like, why did it take so long?
I think that's definitely a part of it. That's an element of it. He knew he wasn't going to move on from his general manager, and I think he knew his general manager had a lot of shared philosophies with Kapler, and he hired Kapler and still had an allegiance to Kapler, and he wanted to show that relationship some respect, but also believe that John Middleton is just such a methodical decision maker. Guy who uses every resource possible. He wants to have that extra conversation with everybody, get that extra opinion. Just wanted to make sure he was making the absolute right decision for the organization. Also think that he, as a man, he respected Gabe Kapler and wanted to do him right by that. And for that reason, took his good, sweet time until he talked to the very last people he wanted to talk to and could make the most informed decision that he wanted to. I know it smacks of indecision. And there's a fine line between indecision and due diligence. And they probably suffered some bad PR for it, but I don't think they lost out on any particular managerial candidates. So in the long run, I don't think it hurt them.
Yeah, they probably didn't. But the thing I look at is that, like, he's got eyeballs. You know, like, he could he really think he could possibly come back with Kapler after a year like this? Any change had to happen because you just couldn't. Your fan base was not going to accept that you're bringing him back. So I don't understand, like, why he could. He made a decisive decision when it came to that hitting coach. And he had the same eyeballs looking at the way this team finished for the second straight year.
Yeah, true. And he does listen to his customers. He's made that clear at a couple of press conferences. The fans matter, the paying customers matter. I mean, he didn't become the businessman he is by not listening to his customers. He knew that it was a tough fit in the community. I think that weighed into his decision. But he still wanted to go out and hear opinions and different opinions, make sure he covered all the bases. I mean, that's the impression I get. I mean, he'll have to answer those questions tomorrow. He has not been available at all, so I'm sure he'll shed some more light on that tomorrow. I just think he wanted to make sure in his mind that he was doing the right thing for his organization, because I do think there were people in that organization who wanted to stay the course.
All right, this smacks of the compromise, though, because everybody else is coming back. Now, when you're going to hire a new manager would like to have his people around. He's got everybody coming back. Was that the compromise he made with Klentak because he felt bad about Zip and Kapler, and so he threw him a bone with this?
No, no, not at all. They have the largest coaching staff they've ever had. They have extra coaches now because, you know, they teach framing pitches, and they have, you know, extra guys in the bullpen. They have a separate infield guy. Basically, all these coaches that came in 2 years ago with Gabe Kapler were on 2-year contracts. A couple of the guys that came in last year were on 2-year contracts. So their contracts are still going on. But these options, they had 2+ an option. They had to be picked up in that first week of October. And, you know, that spanned the time that John was out there deciding whether he wanted to keep Kapler or not. So, you know what? You pick up the options. Those salaries aren't going to break you. If a guy wants to move on, he can move on. If the new manager comes in and decides he doesn't want a particular guy, they can move on from him and pay that guy like they were going to pay Rick Kranitz last year. I see it as really small potatoes, those 7 coaches. The 2 coaches that really are the big ones are the pitching coach and the hitting coach, and the manager. The new manager is going to have heavy impact in those 2 hires, if not complete impact.
All right. So where do they go from here? Where do you think they're looking? Are they looking at successful team bench coach, or are they looking at experienced manager who's out there?
Again, we're going to hear more about that tomorrow. My gut feel is they went young, inexperienced. I should say they went inexperienced, out of the box, progressive thinker last time. I think they will go more experienced this time. Somebody who has experience running a game, overseeing a clubhouse, running a clubhouse, building structure, something I think they need. So that's, you know, the way I believe they will go. I mean, the big name is Joe Girardi, Buck Showalter. I would see them as your top 2 candidates out of the gate. I think they would consider Rob Thompson and Dusty Wasson as well, guys that are on the staff, and I'm sure more people will emerge. In my opinion, one of Gabe's shortcomings, he's a smart guy. He knows the game, but, you know, was he decisive enough on certain decisions, be they you know, matters in the clubhouse or matters of strategy? They need a guy who can be the boss. They need a guy who can be a general, who can look a guy in the eye and say, I think you need a day off. Who can look out to that pitcher on the mound and hold up 4 fingers and say, I think I need you to walk Freddie Freeman. I know you're a good competitor. I respect that, but I'm going to save you from yourself. You need to walk Freddie Freeman because I'm the boss. That's what they need.
There seems to be a conflict, though, because if they hire a guy who is a stronger personality, who has managed before, how does that impede upon the Klentak influence? Because he did influence personnel, lineups, whatever you want to say. I mean, they've got to address that situation, don't they?
Exactly. You know, he had his shot to hire a manager. He's going to get help on this one. He's 0-for-1.
So he's got to step back, basically.
It's going to be more of a collaborative, I believe, in hiring the next manager. And he's going to have to they're going to have to change a little bit. I mean, it's still going to be, they're still going to have that analytic structure that they have. They're still going to try to, I'm sure, pass data, strategic data, things like that, lineup suggestions down to the clubhouse. And where once Gabe was their guy, the guy they hired, the guy they had shared values, baseball values with, the guy that they could control a little bit because they hired him, then probably not going to have that control over this next guy, and that's probably good because they need a balance between gut feel, using your eyes, using your intuition, using your experience, and numbers, analytics. They need to strike a balance that they had failed to strike over the last couple of years.
I think the owner is going to have to dictate that to the guy who may not want to do it that way.
Don't you think he's already done that?
Yeah, I guess he has. He's had that conversation.
He's already Bigfooted his general manager enough.
Yeah.
Hey, the general manager has to go along with it. Because you know what? This next manager might end up saving the general manager's job. Because a year from now, if they're not better,
then he's
under the broiler.
That's what I would just want to get into. No matter who the manager is, now, and I think you made this point earlier on NBC Sports Philadelphia, what can we expect the next year to be now that this team is decidedly behind the Braves, the Nationals, and maybe the Mets? It seems like they need so much to get into that category.
I saw a team that had 2 big collapses the last 2 years in a row. And obviously, main reasons for those collapses were talent deficit with the other teams, but effort had something to do with it. Injuries had something to do with it. I think you're going to have a guy that's going to be firmer in the clubhouse, and I think that's going to lead to a sharper, more focused team. That should help. But that is not going to get this team where it needs to go alone. They are going to need a influx of talent, much like they had an influx this winter. They're going to need to go out and spend some money, make some trades. I don't know how they're going to do it. But, you know, they will go out there and spend money again this offseason. That's their greatest resource. They have it. They can do it. They want to win. That's what it's going to take. They desperately need to go out and get, I'd say, at least two starting pitchers, probably two relievers. Because when you look at this team, they really have one starting pitcher you can count on, and that's Aaron Nola. And he's followed by a series of question marks. And they need to, you know, do something about their pitching staff. Because when you look at the rotations in the National League East, they just don't measure up. So, you know, that is what they're going to have to do, or they're going to be a fourth-place team again.
All right, let me ask you just a couple quick questions on personnel. Just your feelings. And I know this isn't scientific. Do they make a play for Cole?
Absolutely.
They do.
Make a play. Well, why wouldn't you? You have to make a phone call. You have to see what the market is going to be. You have to be in that market and see where it goes. And maybe just like you were in the market for the two big guys last year, you need to be in it. You have the money to play in that deep end of the pool. You need to do it. He's a Scott Boras guy, so is Anthony Rendon. They have to be in that market, too. You have to jump in, see what it's going to take, mix it up. Maybe you come out on top, because those are two areas with that two players that could really, really help you. You know, and both of those guys are represented by Scott Boras. His signature client is here. He does not want his signature client, Bryce Harper, dying on the vine in Philadelphia without winning a championship. He has a chemistry with John Middleton. He knows John Middleton will spend money and has money. Look for Scott Boras, master manipulator. Call him whatever you want. He's master deal maker. Look for him to try to, you know, sidle right up to John Middleton again once this winter.
Are they more likely to have Kingery at third and keep Hernandez at second, or change it up and maybe take a chance with Bohm and move Hernandez and have Kingery play second?
I think Hernandez may have played his last game here, but, you know, I thought that in previous years as well. But my personal opinion is, you know, Scott Kingery is a good talent. He's been inconsistent, never really put it together, never really played his best position. It's time. It's time to see what he can do at his best position. Time to see what that can do for his entire game. I don't think Bohm's going to be ready out of the gate. You might have to plug at third base. Not sure how you go there. You might go on a one-year deal with a Moustakas. Might go on a one-year deal with a Josh Donaldson and get buy Alec Bohm more time. And there's no guarantee he's a third baseman. Might be a first baseman. Hence, you know, maybe you could go out and shop Rhys Hoskins for pitching. Might be an outfielder. So a lot of balls in play. I think it's time to get Kingery to second base. But I know he is a pivotal figure in this offseason because he could play second, he could play short if you move Segura off of short, he could play third, or he could be your center fielder. So he is sort of this key wheel in it all.
All right, do they need to get a center fielder?
Probably. Or, you know, depending on how much you think you can get out of McCutcheon in center field. But I think a center fielder would be a nice addition. I believe, you know, I don't have know what's going to happen with Odubel, but I don't see how that works out, how he's back. Whether or not Hazley can be your everyday guy there, I'm not sure. Kingery could be in play. McCutcheon, I'm not sure how many reps he could pick up there. Maybe if you brought Dickerson back, you could use McCutcheon over there a little bit. But, you know, a guy to come in and really lock down that position might be helpful, but then again, you might take a look at Hazley there and use your resources maybe at third base, maybe and more so in pitching relief and starting pitching where you really need it.
All right. So if Boras asks 7 years for Gerrit Cole, Phillies are in?
Well, I don't know, because they have these, they've had an organizational policy of,
yeah,
you know, multi-year deals. Though they did make Patrick Corbin a 5-year offer, and Washington gave him a 6-year deal, and that got the deal done. 7-year deal, very, very risky for any pitcher, especially one north of 30, because they all break at some point. You're playing with fire. But this is a desperate situation. They need to get this fan base and this town juiced up about baseball again.
And that agent knows that more than anybody, doesn't he?
Sure he does. Sure he does. He's the best in the business for a reason. I don't know if they would go 7, though. That's an awfully, awfully big. That just illustrates another big problem this team has. They don't really have a great farm system. They don't have a good farm system. They don't have pieces. One of the reasons they couldn't absorb all these injuries this year is because they didn't have enough depth. They didn't have enough depth immediately in the farm system. They didn't have enough, and they don't have enough depth down the road where you think they can make a big move to catch Atlanta and Washington here in the next few years. You have to develop your homegrown guys so you don't have to spend 7 years on a pitcher that's north of 30 that you know is going to break at some point.
All right. Sounds good. Jim, always a pleasure, man. Good. The busy day for you. Be busy tomorrow as well. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Mike.
See you. There he is. Jim Salisbury covers Phillies, NBC Sports, Philadelphia. Well, you know Boris is going to ask for 7 years. All right. Why wouldn't you?
And
you get 7 years from somebody for your premier guy on the market? You represent the premier guy on the market. You got $330 million for Bryce Harper.
No.
You get 7 years for Cole?
See, that's going to be the question. He's going to ask for it. But last year, Harper didn't get what people thought he was going to get. Phillies paid a lot, but they didn't pay $400 million. That was the thought.
The most money of any player that ever
right,
had.
But his per-year average was not at the level, and he didn't get the $400 million that people were talking about. Machado got more per year. He might add. There is a chance that the market comes back to the Phillies. I'm not saying it will, but there's a chance because I think the Phillies would go 6 years. So what happens if they go seven and other people come up high average, but five? Phillies come in there with six, more total money. They can sell it, blah, 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 blah. He's here. That could happen.
Six is more than they've ever done.
That's what I mean. But
we shall see.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. And your phone call. Take some phone calls here as Trey hangs out with us. Devon hangs out with us. Mark Farzad is going to come in at 5 o'clock hour. We're back after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Yes, and thanks to the people that made this possible today, including our sponsors. Special thanks to Roger Wilco. They supplied us a couple cases of champagne. We had mimosas this morning and a little sippage in the afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
Finding one of the largest varieties of beer, wine, and spirit stores in New Jersey. Your one-stop shop party headquarters for your favorite adult beverages. And special thanks to Corbley's Bake for making a delicious 10th anniversary cake for us today. That was well-designed, that cake.
Beautiful.
It had every mascot in
it. I was going to say, all your favorites, Mike.
Tremendous likeness of all the mascots.
Yeah, it looked great.
And that thing is ripped apart.
Oh, yeah.
As we come in late. It's ripped apart.
Tastes good.
Wait, Devon, did you have any?
Well, I have not had any yet, but again, it just looks so ripped apart the way it does.
I'll tell you what.
Grab a corner from the other end.
Yeah. No, I'm telling you.
This is what I get at nights, man. You know, you just get the scraps.
Well, there is. No.
I know. No, me and Ty make an effort to make sure that there's food here for you.
Ty sometimes puts things away for me.
No. I do it more than sometimes.
Yeah.
But all the time.
There's people who go into the fridge.
Oh, okay.
Steal it.
And straight steal it. He knows who I'm talking about.
Yes,
dude,
I do.
They got to put stuff away from me. I get it like 1:15.
Yeah, we do. We got to put stuff away.
You know when they bring food here, it's like all five stages, like it's like Wimpy in the Popeye cartoon. Like everybody smells the scent of food from other stations. They come flocking in here.
And then you get the email. Come on down.
Yeah.
Right? I'm like, well, wait a minute. I got some other people who might.
Yeah.
Nah, too late.
Nothing. Free food for radio people, like vultures coming in.
Yeah, it is.
Well, at least y'all get it. We don't get anything in the morning.
You don't get that one in the morning?
I thought it was there in the morning.
Well, we got this today.
Y'all get donuts.
When?
There'd be donuts left over, man.
No.
Y'all don't get bagels?
No.
So nothing? Them sandwiches, you be ordering those sandwiches?
What sandwiches?
The breakfast sandwiches they talk about. Y'all order them?
Nah, we don't get any of that.
You got egg pizza.
That's probably the 10 o'clock crew. Nah, we don't,
Man.
Like, I think we've had food brought to us maybe twice.
In a year?
Yeah.
That's no good.
Did you see that egg pizza? Did you eat that egg pizza?
Yeah, I was out on that.
Yeah, I had to pick the meat off of it, but yeah.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I don't eat the meat.
Let me tell you something about, I said this earlier, the world's prejudice against non-egg people.
Mike, I'm with you.
You think, Tyron, you think black people have it rough in this country?
Yeah.
Anti-egg people. Seriously, you don't even have it. No, nobody caters to the anti-egg people.
I'm both. I don't eat egg either. So there you go.
He got a tough road. He got a tough road of a
I get nothing at night to eat, and I don't eat eggs and every. Yeah.
What? Well, and artificial sugar. Artificial sweetener.
I hear you speak of this.
Artificial sweetener. Like, nobody uses artificial sweetener.
Well, because it's supposed to be bad for you now with the saccharin.
Oh, sugar's good for you?
Well, no.
You have to go raw sugar.
Your stomach up.
I know.
But you have to go raw sugar.
There you go.
Not that process.
Some stevia.
Yeah. I don't do sugar.
You should try stevia.
Huh?
You should try the stevia.
Yeah, no, it's
a natural sweetener.
Looks too much like sugar.
It's a natural sweetener. It's just like the fake stuff.
You want sweet and low?
Yes, he does.
I like
two
my
of them.
Cancer-causing saccharin.
Come on, man.
All right?
Yeah, all right.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. 5 o'clock hour is ahead. We'll get some phone calls in after this. 97.5. Are you guys leaving?
Yeah,
I'm done.
Nobody
has to leave.
I'm back tonight at 8. So, are you guys coming in with me tonight? Me and Joe? Yeah, you guys in? All-star day.
Yeah. I've been here since before 7 a.m., man.
Tell you what, Devon, I'll go home for dinner and I'll come back.
All right, my man.
Yeah, sure. All right. Back after this, 97.5 The Fanatic, NBC Sports Philly.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.